All government is, in its essence, a conspiracy against the superior man. Its one permanent object is to oppress him and cripple him. If it be aristocratic in organization, then it seeks to protect the man who is superior only in law against the man who is superior in fact. If it be democratic, then it seeks to protect the man who is inferior in every way against both. One of its primary functions is to regiment men by force, to make them as much alike as possible and as dependent upon one another as possible, to search out and combat originality among them. All it can see in an original idea is potential change and hence an invasion of its prerogatives. The most dangerous man to any government is a man who is able to think things out for himself without regard for the prevailing superstitions and taboos. Almost inevitably, he comes to the conclusion that the government he lives under is dishonest, insane, and intolerable. And if so, if he is romantic, he tries to change it. And even if he is not romantic personally, he is very apt to spread discontent amongst those who are. And this week's opening quote comes from Henry Louis Mencken. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. Well, here I am in Lima, Ohio. Well, actually, it's called Lima, Ohio, which is a strange thing to me because I flew here from Lima, Peru, and it's kind of strange to be in a town the same name that is pronounced differently, but I guess that's the way America works sometimes, folks. It's been quite interesting seeing what things are like here on the ground in the United States as well while I've been traveling across. I came here on the 17th to speak at the Free Your Mind conference, which was quite a good event, folks. Unfortunately, I missed most of it. I kind of arrived there about 2 hours before my speech, after 46 hours of travel, which was ridiculous. I was supposed to spend 15 hours traveling there, and I ended up spending 46 because of airline mess-ups, which seems to be the way with me. I seem to have this propensity for airline screw-ups when I go traveling. But suffice to say, I did get there very late, and when I arrived, I only had about 2 hours room to move before I had to be on stage speaking. So suffice to say again that I really can't remember too much about what I actually said. I think I just kind of went onto autopilot and spoke for an hour or so and then went back to my room and passed out. But it was wonderful to go there and to actually catch up with a few people, even though I only actually did spend one night socializing with them because I was only there for one night. But I did catch up with Freeman, and I managed to catch up with Mark Passio and Luke Radowski and a bunch of people. So it was good to go and be part of the event anyway. And from there, I traveled to Pittsburgh, where I stayed with a wonderful guy in Pittsburgh who gave his home to me to use, and then traveled on to Louisville, Ohio, to spend a few days with a really wonderful family in Louisville, which is a nice little small town. And at the moment, I am in Lima. And I'm pre-recording this show because tomorrow night, when the show is due to go to air, I'll actually be at a farm festival event in St. Paris, Ohio, which is just outside Columbus. I'm going to have a bit of a jam session and get up and speak on Saturday, so that should be a good event, and I'm looking forward to that one. And I tell you, folks, it's been very educational being here in the United States and actually seeing things on the ground. It's very different from the world that I come from in Australia. Things are run very differently here. The society is very differently structured. In many ways, it's the same, but the undertones are different. The undertones of the social structure are different. People are really doing it hard here in the United States in the small towns that I'm seeing as I'm traveling across from Philadelphia to Ohio, especially in the town that I'm in now, Lima. And also in Pittsburgh, I don't see a lot of future for people in these places. I really met some wonderful people in Pittsburgh. It's an interesting town. It's quite a beautiful city in some ways, with the river and the way it's all laid out. There's a very interesting looking building in the center of town. I may be able to show you a photograph of. I can't actually download the footage from my camera at the moment because I don't have cable to do it. I'll have to buy one when I get to a shop. But there's a very interesting building in the center of town, a high rise, which kind of looked like it had a temple on top. Very strange looking place. But I just don't see a lot of hope for the people, or at least I don't see a lot of hope being provided for the people. I don't see the right circumstances for a thriving community being provided for the people. I mean, and not even pretending to provide this type of security for anybody. There is no pretense here. At least in Australia and many places in Europe, there is a certain pretense of the government attempting to do that. But here in the United States, the government seems to have completely dismissed any need to actually care for the inner needs of the people at all. Here it's like the people are just being squeezed slowly by the government, just basically being squeezed out of existence. They're being squeezed out of the small towns, they're being squeezed out of their homes and squeezed out of their livelihoods and just being thrown on the trash heap and discarded. And of course it's all done with a really patriotic air, and the government is always telling you how great the country is. The propaganda here is incredible. I mean, every cartoon show, every television show, everything I see is really the underlying undertone is how great America is and how great it is to be here. And yet all you see is how the government has seemed to have lost any respect for the needs of the people at all. And it's really quite frightening how blasé the whole system seems to be about it. And also the fact that the people on the ground don't really seem to notice it. They just sort of expect it. It's just that life is hard and things are tough and that's just the way it is. Of course, there are many people who are awake, but for the vast majority of people, they simply just seem to be in a state of acceptance of a system that they believe to be beyond their control. Some of the people that I visited, there was some really a wonderful group of people that the man Nick, whose home I was staying at, introduced me to. And they had a beautiful little pocket of forest and a nice little circle that they'd formed there and a little clearing near their houses. And they'd set up a really nice little space for themselves. And it was like a little beacon of light in the middle of a very, very dark city, because it's quite an industrial sort of an area. And it's interesting to see the way the houses are sort of packed on top of each other. And it's just a different way of structuring society. And also traveling across from there, looking at the small towns, I find it interesting that the towns are so open, an open plan, and yet the people within the towns are often so separated. And it's the same here in Lima. I noticed that there aren't any back fences and things. You know, it's very difficult to see where your land ends and the neighbor's land begins on most of the properties, most of the residential properties. And I imagine this is the way it is throughout most of the United States. And it kind of looks nice, but in many ways it tends to separate the people in some way, because they don't really have their private outdoor space where they go and set up their own little yard and their own little garden and all this sort of stuff. It's very easy to just kind of bypass the streets really and just wander in between the houses, because there's nothing to stop you. And it's just an interesting way for suburbs to be laid out. It's not the way you see it in Australia or in England or Europe. Things aren't quite as open plan as they are here in the United States. Lima, the town I'm in, is a very industrial town as well. It's dominated by a very large refinery in the center of town, which is most of the work for the town, I imagine, and also a tank factory, which is something that we really do not see in Australia. We do not manufacture very many tanks, if any at all, in Australia, and you just sort of don't see these sorts of things. And really, in order to understand the dichotomy here in Lima, to understand what the town's really like, I mean, the refinery here is quite toxic. There's benzene in the air. There's actually huge tanks of benzene and other chemicals just outside of town. And the two main businesses here are the refinery and the hospital. They apparently employ just about as many people as the refinery. And that should really say something to you folks, that in a town as small as Lima, it is the refinery and the hospital that get most of the business from the people. And with the huge domination of industry in the town that I'm seeing, and the people that are living very, very quiet and sort of quite desperate lives in some way, it's quite an interesting thing to see for a foreigner touring the country for the first time. Especially since I am touring these sort of out-of-the-way areas where the tourists don't generally go, I would imagine. I'm not exactly doing the regular haunts that most people would go. I was going to go to New York City for a day last week, but I just didn't get the time. So I'll do that next year. I do intend to come back to the United States next year, folks. I'm booked to speak at the Free Your Mind conference again in April next year. And I intend to possibly organize a series of small talks across the United States, perhaps from the West Coast to the East Coast, and perhaps end up in California, and just get to meet a few of the people on the ground over there. I'd like to see a little bit more of the country, and I think it would be interesting to see the difference between the West Coast and the East Coast. So that's the plan for 2017. So if you are in the United States, folks, I look forward to maybe coming and visiting your town sometime in the next 12 months. And it'll be great to catch up with people. Something that I have noticed with the people in the United States, though, is there is a real sense of camaraderie here amongst the people, regardless of the conditions that many of them are living under, and which is quite an interesting thing for a country that is presented to the world as one that is being so prosperous and where everyone is really making a go of it and everyone is capable of reaching the heights that everyone's always wanted to reach. I mean, this is the way America is presented. Everyone wants to come to America in order to be free because it's the land of opportunity and the land of abundance. But when you come here and see the way people are struggling on the ground, it really doesn't seem that way. But even amongst all of that, there is a certain sense of camaraderie amongst the people. People are very friendly here. I noticed that everybody's willing to say hello. Most people are very open to discussion and very open to talking to you. And it's not just because I'm a foreigner. I'm noticing it amongst just the locals. Everyone is very, very open. And there is a real sense that something better could happen. And so that's kind of a good undertone to see amongst the people, but it isn't the undertone that you see amongst the general society. There's a very ominous darkness that seems to exist below the surface in the United States, a very dark energy. Perhaps it is the military and industrial nature of the places that I'm visiting, but it is an interesting dichotomy when you see the underlying darkness of the undertones of the society, and yet you see the underlying hope and the underlying unity and camaraderie amongst the people of the United States. I mean, most people of the United States that I see are very, very proud to be American, even though many of them seem to know that there's something very wrong with the country. And you certainly don't have to be awake to see that, because as I said, most people are doing it pretty hard and they know that things really shouldn't be this way and things never used to be this way and it just seems to be getting worse. There are a lot of people, I see a lot of flags around hanging from people's houses, but there are a lot of people who are very proud to be American, but are very, very disturbed at the nature of their government. It's going to be interesting to see how the talk is received tomorrow night, a talk that I'm giving in Ohio, being as it is a kind of a country region, and it is sure to be a very different crowd to any type of crowd that I've spoken to normally. I actually think this is the first time that they've had any type of conscious speakers at this event. I think it's normally just a band event, and so that'll be something interesting as well. There seems to be an inordinate amount of shootings here, folks. There were 7 people shot in Ohio last Friday, and apparently there were 3 people shot down the road just last night or the day before, so that's an interesting sort of a state to be in. Though I don't expect any of that is going to be going on at the music festival. But it just seems to be the way with Ohio, apparently. I'm told there is quite a lot of violent crime here. Interesting place to be, folks. Lovely people that I'm staying with, though. The people that I've met and the people that I've stayed with, the families that I've stayed with, really have been very, very nice people. And it's been a real pleasure to come and meet people on the ground. That's been one of the good things about coming here, not staying at hotels, actually staying at people's places and getting to meet people on the ground and see what family life is like on the ground here in the United States. It's been quite interesting and it's been quite educational and really beautiful homes that people have made for themselves in amongst what is really not a friendly environment here in Lima. It's really not a friendly and comfortable environment for any family to be growing up, I don't think. I mean, it's a nice enough town, but there are certain elements that are just uncomfortable, such as the refinery, and there is a certain amount of poverty in the town, which of course attracts a certain amount of crime. But in amongst that, the families that I've been staying with have really got their beautiful little homes and beautiful little environments that they're living in, very nurturing and very kind environments and very nurturing and very kind people. And it's been an absolute pleasure to be coming and staying with them. And I'd really like to send a word out to Nick and to Susan in Pittsburgh and to Dominic and Liz and their family, wonderful family in Louisville, and to Jennifer and George and Lenny Bruce and the rest of the family that I'm staying with here in Lima. It's really been wonderful for people to have opened their homes to me and to have been able to have this opportunity to experience family life on the ground as I travel. That's one of the good things about doing what I do, folks, is that what I do really is people work, which means I get to meet the people, and meeting the people really is a huge bonus and a huge gift to my life along the way. Of course, from here, I'm going to the UK. I leave Columbus, Ohio on the 5th, and I arrive in the UK on the 6th of May. And I'm speaking at AV6 at Horwood House with Ian Crane and Zen Garda and a bunch of other people, I believe, on the 13th of May. And from there, I'm going to Amsterdam to speak at the Open Mind Conference in Amsterdam on the 21st and 22nd of May. So I hope to see anybody who is in the area at those events as well. Be interesting to get back into England and to see what it's like. It'll be very interesting to go back to Europe and see what it's like in Europe now. Things have probably changed a little bit there since I was there last year, although I don't suppose they've changed too much in Amsterdam. But it's going to be good to get back there and to catch up with Zen Gardner and Willem and a bunch of people in the area. And of course, from there, I'm going back to Peru, where I hope to spend the next 6 months working on a couple of films, which I've been wanting to get finished for a while, but just haven't had the time or the space to do so. So that's a lot of what the little venture in Peru is going to be about. Something else that I've noticed in the United States here as well since I've been is how lost many of the people are within themselves. I've met a lot of quite decent people who are doing quite decent things and are feeling frustrated because they're not able to make a difference in the communities that they live in. I see a lot of people who are really desperate to wake up those around them and are quite frustrated and disturbed and often not feeling very comfortable at themselves because they're not having success in waking up people around them. And I don't really think it's everybody's place to wake the world up per se, even wake your neighbors up per se, in as much as I don't think it's that important for everybody to be sharing information about alternative media or about the real state of the world, about some of the things that you may learn on this show and on other shows. While it's important that people have the information, it's not that beneficial to the people who are awake to come up against brick walls when they're attempting to share this type of information with their neighbors, and I think there's other ways they can go about it. For example, I've often said, if you've listened to the shows, that the best thing you can really do in your community is to lead by example in what you do. And this is a way of waking people up without them really knowing that's what you're doing, without them really knowing what your political views are. There's ways of presenting yourself to the community and of acting within your community in a manner that can be very, very infectious, in as much as it can be very empowering to the people around you to see the confidence that you have and the way you approach issues that they are very often too afraid to deal with and too uncomfortable to deal with. Now, leading by example in what you do is a really incredible thing, folks, because that way you inspire people to want to emulate your actions and to want to be like you and to have the confidence that you've got. And you break down barriers with people in this way. You start leading in your community in this way. And before you know it, people want to be your friend. They want to know what it is that gives you this confident air. And at that point, you can start sharing your political views with them. And there are little things you can do in your community to empower the community, which will wake the community up. And for example, I was speaking to a man that I was staying with in Louisville, Ohio, and he was wanting to put a garden next door. He was thinking that there was a disused playground next door and how it would be a good idea to put a garden there. And I thought it would be a good idea to approach the council about putting the garden there and actually get the school children involved and see if you could make it some sort of a feature for the community to want to be involved in and a way to inspire the community. I mentioned there would probably be council members who would be against it, but there would probably be council members who were for it. And this would help wake these people up. And if perhaps the council members were for the idea and they wanted to get the school children involved, what they were going to come up with when they got to the school was probably the Common Core movement, which was going to see that this was not part of the Common Core curriculum. And even if the garden doesn't go ahead, by simply putting a scenario in place that is going to serve the community and empower the community and getting all of the community on board and wanting this to happen, and then putting the concept at the council and the council thinking that this is a good idea and then having them stopped by the education system, will serve to awaken many members of the council to the fact that there is something terribly wrong with the education system. So even if the garden doesn't go ahead, it has awoken most of the town and the council to the fact that Common Core does not have their best interests at heart. So there are certain ways you can go about things, folks. You can do it in such a way as it's a non-conspiratorial approach, and you're actually taking steps to address an issue that concerns the community, but the community doesn't really know that that is the issue that you're addressing, because you've sort of gone about it by a little bit of a obscure pathway, which they may not realize that this has been your ultimate goal. And just think, I mean, along the way, you may actually get a community garden started as well, which is going to do all the things that we want to do to begin with. Community gardens really are an incredible way of empowering the community, folks, especially in small towns, because it gets everybody involved. And it gets the people out there playing with the soil again, and gets their hands dirty, and gets them reconnected with the earth, because that's what happens when you go and start playing with the soil. You just get this energy exchange that happens, and you just sort of rediscover how great this world that we live on really is. But these are things that you can do, folks, and even if the community gardens don't work, as I said, it's still a way of empowering your community. You can't have a stake in the outcome of any of these projects that you want to do. I mean, remember, what we're really attempting to do here with many of these projects, as much as we would like to get them off the ground, what we're attempting to do is awaken and empower the community. And if we can work to awaken certain elements within the power structure of the community, such as local council, if we can help to awaken these people to the fact that Common Core doesn't have their best interests at heart and the government really isn't doing the right thing, then we may actually get somewhere. And I don't believe we're going to find any remedy within the system, folks. There is no remedy that will ever be found within this system, but there are still elements within the system that we can use to expose the fictional, farcical nature of the system to the people who are still asleep. And that's why I've been using this approach lately. I really do believe that we have to start speaking to the sleeping masses in a language they can understand. As much as we know the system is fiction, as much as we disagree with it, and as much as we know there is no remedy there, there has to be a way of empowering people within the system to that knowledge by using the understandings that they already have and their belief that the system is real. We can sort of turn that around on itself by showing how the system contradicts itself and how it never seems to act within the parameters that it outlines, and it never ever seems to act in the best interest of the people. It's only ever about supporting the system and supporting the corporate model. And we can do this, folks. We can wake people up by using this system against itself. And I've been doing this for the last couple of years, and I've been having quite good results. And so that's, I think, quite a good approach that people can adopt. And it's a very empowering approach, and it's a way that you can do something on the ground in your community, which isn't really out there spreading a conspiratorial message and getting the door slammed in your face and getting called a conspiracy theorist and insulted and all the things that go along with it. It's a way of using mechanisms that are at hand and that are obvious to the people around you. And so that's something that you can do. If you're feeling a little bit disempowered and you're living in a small town, I think it's a method that you can employ to get a little bit of movement on the ground and get a little bit of confidence and empowerment back into yourself, because I think that's a lot of what's happening is people are seeing the world for what it is, and they're becoming very frustrated and often very upset and very withdrawn at their inability to be able to make what they see as any type of viable change. But I think it's just because they're not taking the correct approach. It's very difficult to speak to people on the ground, speak to your neighbours, and to readjust their political mindset by simply giving them information. What you have to do is start creating groundswells and movements on the ground to empower the community into rediscovery of themselves. I think that's a huge key that many people are overlooking, because it's got to start there, folks. If we don't remember who and what we are, and we don't feel empowered on an individual level, then what hope have we ever got of moving things forward? What hope have we ever got of the people having the confidence to want to move things forward if they don't feel confident in the knowledge of themselves? And that's something that we can bring back to them simply by leading by example in what we do in our own local communities and starting these little grass fires and letting them grow across the country. I really don't think people should be so hard on themselves. I really don't. If you're having trouble waking people up, and if you're living in a small town, if you're living in some of the situations that I'm seeing here across the United States, I mean, really, spreading information is often not going to work. What you have to do is crack the shell from within and get the people to realize that they're actually worth more than what they've been taught to believe they are. You've got to help people understand that they actually do have value, that every man, woman, and child on this earth is worth something and is worth far more than what they're being dished out by their current employees. It's very difficult for people to really see that, though. It's very difficult for people to look at government as being employees, especially here in the United States. As I said, the propaganda is incredibly thick. And even those people who are awake to the fact that there is something terribly wrong are still very often flying flags out the front of their houses, which is an enormous contradiction, but it just goes to show what the general mindset of the population is. As I said, many people are very proud to be part of this country, and that does give them a real sense of power if it's used in the right way, because there is that underlying hope and that underlying belief that something good could happen. And many of them know that it's only going to happen when the people stand up and make it happen. It's just they're not sure how to really go about it. And I think the most important thing they need to do is to regain the confidence and belief in themselves that the government has worked so hard to remove from them. Because that's what it does, folks. Everything this government does is designed to undermine the confidence of the people and to force the people into believing that they actually need the government to look after them, when it's the government that is the source of all of their problems, all of their hardships, and all of their woes. And that has never really been seen more clearly in anywhere that I've travelled, the way it has been displayed to me here in the short trip that I've made across only a few states of the United States of America. It really is very, very prevalent here, folks, and the programming is very thick, but the people are becoming aware of it, I think. But look, I think we've reached break time here, folks, so I'm going to have to leave it there for now, and we're going to have a break. It is wonderful to be able to have this time and spend with you today and to get a chance to be able to pre-record this show here as I'm staying with friends. And I will return and speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So one thing I'm really noticing in the world today, folks, is addictions. And I think people in Western society are having a real problem with addictions. And addictions can take many forms. It isn't just being addicted to drugs or being addicted to any particular type of activity. It's also being addicted to our emotions, it's being addicted to lifestyle, it's being addicted to certain types of food. I'll tell you something that I've noticed in the United States here is the entire country seems to be addicted to peanut butter. I'm finding peanut butter is in everything, and not just peanuts. I mean, this is taken to a ridiculous extreme, folks, and it's really quite bizarre, because most places that you travel around the world, you will find there's peanuts in things. But in the United States, it isn't peanuts, it's peanut butter is in things. It's in, like, everything. Every third candy bar that I see in a store is a peanut butter candy bar. You can buy chocolate-coated peanut butter cups. I mean, it's just unbelievable, folks. Everything seems to contain peanut butter, which is quite interesting for a country that has 1 in 13 children now who has a food allergy, and most of the food allergies seem to be peanut allergies, and here we have peanut butter being basically spread around the entire country as the most prevalent source of a protein for the population. To me, that is very, very bizarre, folks, for peanut butter to be presented as the main source of protein for people. But getting back to addictions, I think addictions are becoming very, very prevalent in all Western society for a number of reasons. And it isn't just because people are becoming depressed and despondent and get putting on prescription drugs to deal with the certain psychological issues that they're facing. Very often we suffer addictions in order to compensate certain losses that we feel in our lives. Very often we find people have had experiences in their lives which have left them feeling discontented or dissatisfied. Many times people feel very alone by not having a connection with their parents, for example, or not having a proper connection with their partner, or even possibly being discarded by their children, as their children have grown up and have failed to really understand the relevance of their parents and what their parents have been through to bring them into the world, have often taken their parents for granted. And so the parents form these addictive personalities to compensate for these losses in their lives. And it happens to a great many people, and it is very often this need to compensate for things that cause us to feel bad about ourselves, and often inadequacies that we perceive ourselves to have. But often these inadequacies are simply projections of society. They're things that we measure ourselves up to, which are not parameters that we should be measuring ourselves to. I mean, in our society, we are given parameters to measure ourselves up to all the time, which are artificial parameters and irrelevant parameters, really. When you look at your life, these are things that are not important to being who you are. But we're given certain rungs of success and social standing that we're told we should have, and we strive to reach these goals, which are often unreachable goals because they're unrealistic goals, because the way they're presented. Everything about this society really doesn't present us with realistic goals in what success is and what we should be doing with our lives. It presents us kind of a TV type of package, and we think that this is what we're supposed to be. And of course, the world on the television is very, very different to the world that is presented to us when we go outside of our front door. But very often, somewhere in our minds, we still expect that television world to exist somewhere. And we think that maybe if we find the right town or do certain things in our own town or make certain changes to our own lives, then suddenly that television reality will unfold before us, because we need that television reality because that is what success is, because that's what we're told. But it's completely unrealistic. And in our lives and many things that we do in our actions, we have a stake in the outcome of what we do. And this is very damaging as well. And when I say that, folks, I'm not saying that you shouldn't strive for goals. I'm not saying that you shouldn't plan to do things. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be responsible and just be blasé about your life. What I'm saying is that you should let your life unfold before you and realize that there are many, many obstacles that are put in place to prevent you from achieving your goals. And so you need to examine what those goals are and whether they are based in realism or whether they are based in certain parameters that the society has told you you should be achieving. I mean, really, folks, what this life is about is self-discovering. It's about companionship. It's about helping people that you come across along the way. It's about leaving breadcrumbs for yourself to follow in what lives may follow. You know, really, if you want to be successful in this world, all you need to do, really, is find someone to love and find someone who loves you. And that may be hard for some people to do as well. You know, there may be people out there who live quite lonely and solitary lives. I mean, I live quite a lonely and solitary life. But I love many people, and I'm loved by many people. And this is an enormous source of strength for me, because I see the changes everywhere I go. Everywhere I go, I meet people who appreciate the words that I say and appreciate me simply for who I am. And I appreciate them for who they are. And that is very rewarding, and that is a wonderful way to live your life. And if you've got family around you in that, then that is an incredibly beautiful thing, folks. And as I said, the homes that I've been staying in as I've been traveling across America, I've met some of the most wonderful families I really have. People with beautiful, warm, nurturing environments that they are raising their families in. And if you've got that, if you've got a home to go to and you've got someone who cares about you in that home, then really that is being truly wealthy, ladies and gentlemen. It truly is the most pure form of wealth that one can have, is to have the love and support of those around them. And it's very important for people to see that and to realize that the addictions that they suffer are really not necessary, because these addictions are based in unrealistic perceptions that they have of themselves because of unrealistic goals that they're striving for because of unrealistic parameters that they've been told that they need to achieve. And that's what this society does. That's the way it keeps people at loggerheads with each other and keeps people in a state of subservience, because it keeps people in a state where they simply don't believe in themselves. But they must, because all that exists within this society is people. That's all that exists anywhere in the world as far as the human race goes, folks, and there is no one who has any more value than anybody else. And if people weren't striving for unrealistic goals and striving to be some sort of a symbol of success within this system, because that's what we've been told it is, and if they were to step back from that and simply see themselves as the unique expression of creation that they are, with all of their unique artistic abilities to be themselves to the greatest of their potential, then they would see just what they have and just what a gift this life is. Because ultimately it's about expressing yourself and being who you are, stripping away all of the pretense, all of the rubbish, all of the parameters that you've been told you should be, and simply being who and what you are, and feeling that, feeling what it's like to be you. It's an incredible thing to be alive here and to have the ability to communicate with others, to be able to look around you and see the trees, see the environment, and see the world that we live in, and to be able to have the ability to make a difference in that world and change the direction the world is going simply by changing your perspective of yourself and how you apply yourself to the world. That's a beautiful thing, and it's a unique gift that we all have if we can simply step back for a moment and take a little bit of time out to see our own perfection and see our own uniqueness, because it is that uniqueness that is perfect in every way, in just the way it is. That's what's needed, is for you to be here exactly as you are, so that you can use that vehicle as a road to self-discovery and a tool with which you can improve the habitat for all, improve the world that we live in, improve the environment that we live in, by simply changing your perspective and changing how you apply yourself to the world that we live in. When people can learn to make this simple adjustment in their perspective, then they will begin to see some real change in their lives, and that change will ripple out and will affect the world around them, as things always do. It's all a mirror, folks. It's a mirror. Now, this is an emotional journey that we're facing here. Emotions create reality, because it is the emotions we attach to our actions that create the objects and create the situations that we face. It's the emotions we attach to our actions that create the reactions and the responses that we have to certain situations. It's the emotions we attach to our being itself which causes us to be subservient to the so-called rulers who are running this world into the ground. This is all emotional response, folks. It's an emotionally based reality. And if we can simply change our perspective and change the way we apply our emotions to our actions and change the emotions that we're in, get rid of this disempowering state that we believe we have and this disempowering state that we keep inflicting upon ourselves, because it is us who does it. We do inflict it upon ourselves, folks. We police our own thoughts, and we teach ourselves to believe that we are just little people and we are disempowered, but it's really not true. It's simply the result of training, and the training has been there through our whole lives. It's been there since birth, and it continues through our education. It continues through our business systems and even through our social systems, the entire hierarchical nature of all of our systems. It doesn't matter what you do, folks. It doesn't matter what organization you belong to. You can be part of the local chess club. You can be part of the local return services club, the local golf or hockey club, and you'll still find that there's a hierarchy. There's always those who have more money, those who do things different, those who are better looking or worse looking, and those who are accepted and those who are shunned. And it's usually by their social standing or by their wealth or looks or whatever. This is just the way it works. And this causes us to judge ourselves poorly, because we're always constantly judging ourselves by parameters that are given to us by the society and by other people, and never by our own standards. And if you're ever going to judge yourself in any way, folks, then it should be by your own standards, if you're going to judge yourself at all. And it shouldn't really be judgment that you offer to yourself or to anybody else. Perhaps it could be assessment or appraisement or whatever. But don't call it judgment, because when we choose to judge, very often we choose to be jury and executioner at the same time, and that is very counterproductive. It's far more productive to simply appraise and assess situations and to make the necessary changes to perhaps move things in a better direction from that point if we see some sort of a failure in our actions. But We shouldn't be judgmental of ourselves or of anybody else. That doesn't mean to say we let people get away with things and we don't call people up when they're doing the wrong thing. But again, is this judgment or is this simply being morally capable? We really have to make these distinctions and look at what our intentions are when we do things, folks. But we tend to get taught to keep this mid-ground, you know. It's almost like a Prozac of spirituality, this whole lack of judgment thing, which often causes us to fail to appraise or assess certain situations when that is required and action is required to alleviate certain situations. Oh, no, we can't go there. That's being judgmental. Well, very often it's not, folks. Very often it's simply taking the moral high ground and doing what needs to be done. So again, it's very important to look at these things and look at these situations and see where the training lies and see where action is required and look at what our intentions are when we do act. Or even when we fail to act. I mean, sometimes when we fail to act, we say we're doing so because we're being non-judgmental, but really perhaps we're just being cowardly. And sometimes that is very often the case, folks. People simply are too afraid to step up when they need to. They think, oh no, I'm being judgmental, or that's their karma. But really, if you're observing a situation, then you are involved in that situation. Otherwise, Spirit wouldn't have put you there to be an observer. And if something is happening in front of your eyes that you have the ability to intervene and to prevent from happening and prevent any further damage being done, then perhaps it is your dharma to do so. And should you fail to follow your dharma, perhaps you will be subject to karma down the road. I mean, that's really the way it works, folks. When you are an observer of a situation and you are involved in that situation, whether you choose to be or not, it's simply the way it is. And that isn't to say that you need to jump in and try to defend somebody against some giant monster who's terrorizing them and is going to beat both of you up. I mean, you've got to be sensible about these situations. But very often we can intervene in certain situations without any danger to ourselves, and we can make things better if we choose to do so. It's just we very often don't choose to do so, and we really need to examine our intentions in those situations, folks, because I think that if we do, very often people are going to find that their intentions may not be as pure as they thought they were to begin with. And you see a lot of this in the New Age movement. You see a lot of repressed emotion and repressed social trauma and just general trauma that people go through because they tend to bury a lot of situations when they should be addressing them. For example, where I come from around the Northern Rivers area of New South Wales, there's a lot of very false spirituality in the area. There's a big hippie culture in the area. There's a lot of New Age people in the area. And many of these people are very kind of lovey-dovey and pretend that everything's all great all the time and pretend to like everybody, but inside they harbour all sorts of pent-up emotions that they're simply not expressing. You find that in areas such as this, there's usually high amounts of domestic violence and all sorts of things behind the scenes because of the amount of bottled-up emotions that people keep. This is why I think it's very important for people to express their emotions. This is why I don't have any problem expressing my emotions, because I don't keep anything bottled up inside that way. I'm quite happy to say what I feel regarding any situation and not hold back at all, as I'm sure many of you have heard recently in some of the things that I've said online. I really don't have a problem with expressing my emotions, folks. I prefer to express them completely at the time when they are manifesting and get the air cleared rather than bottle them up and have them turn into something else, like some sort of depression or perhaps even an addiction, because that's what these things can do. You know, addictions can come from bottled up emotions because ultimately that's what these dependencies are. You know, if we're even dependent on our parents and we're feeling bereft of anything decent because we didn't really have the type of childhood that we thought we would have had or we should have had, or we didn't get the respect from our parents or the love from our parents that we need, this is a bottled up emotion that we never express, which may possibly turn into an addiction later on, or perhaps some sort of sickness, an ulcer, or some sort of heart problems, or any number of things that we seem to manifest. Many people who fail to express their emotions or harbour ill will towards others from failing to express their emotions end up with sicknesses and all sorts of things. This is what many sicknesses are, folks. These are bottled up stress and blockages that we hold from failing to express our emotions in the way we should have done. So it's important to look at all of this sort of stuff. You know, when you see these situations unfolding before you where you could intervene and perhaps remedy a situation, and you bottle that need to do so up, and you bottle that emotion that you're feeling up inside you, and you sort of tuck it away and call it judgment, then that could well manifest later in life as something else. It could manifest as a sickness, a physical problem that you manifest, or it could simply manifest as an emotional blockage, an emotional trauma, which causes you to have problems in your relationships and all sorts of things down the line. You just don't know where these things come from. But if you can understand that it is an emotionally based reality, and that it is by converting our emotions into physical actions that we create the world, then you begin to see where we're going, and you begin to see why it is important to express yourself and to look at why you feel emotions, and to look at how these things are teaching you lessons and offering you perspective and offering you pathways to healing, because they very often are. You know, if we don't express ourselves and express our emotions and allow these release valves to function in the way they are designed to do, then we see all sorts of problems. And this is what our society is doing, folks. Our society is very much designed to bottle these emotions up in people. Emotions are being treated as illnesses lately. We're getting pills for anybody who thinks anything that may be not construed as normal these days. And of course, normal means that you're walking the very thin line of no emotional response to anything. And this is called normal. And of course, if you do offer an emotional response, it's often called a sickness, and you're put on medication or whatever. I mean, this is where we're going, folks. It's ridiculous. And this is what is causing so many problems in our society. And it's what's causing all of the authoritarian nature of our society as well. I mean, if people were able to express their emotions properly, they certainly wouldn't be putting up with authority the way they are, because I'm pretty sure most people are damn annoyed about it. They're just failing to say anything about it because they believe that it's not normal to do so. It's normal to just be happy and to allow things to unfold the way they will, and to believe that the government has your best interests at heart. And this is completely absurd, folks. We're turning into a completely Orwellian, brave new world, which is far surpassing anything either of those authors actually envisioned, I think. We really are getting to a point of the ridiculous now, folks. And watching how the populations are being squeezed out all around the world, and watching the different methods of depopulation that are being used in various countries, is very interesting as well. In Australia, of course, we're seeing a massive loss of rights and open mining operations and incredibly repressive police coming down upon the people, and this is the way depopulation is occurring in that country. Of course, it's happening as the economy is rising as well, and the cost of living is going up and up. But again, it's still a lot easier to get by in Australia than it is in some places in the United States. In the United States, we're seeing depopulation taking place by basically feeding the people very, very bad food and squeezing them out of any type of economic value and just discarding them along the way. In Europe, we're seeing it occurring via the mass migration into Europe, which has been long planned according to the Kalugi plan. In the Middle East, we're seeing it simply by bombing the countries into oblivion and destroying any hope of preserving their culture or dignity or heritage at all. In African nations and Asian nations, we're seeing it done simply through poverty and through the infliction of the Western system upon these people, and through the enormous abuses of children we're seeing in these countries as well. This is happening in the Middle East as well, most especially in Saudi Arabia. There is a massive amount of child abuse going on in Saudi Arabia, where many children are kept as slaves. Children from Syria and all through the area are taken to this brutal and repressive regime and used as slave labor. We've seen this in Israel as well, and all through the Middle East. So depopulation takes many forms, folks, but it is happening all around the world, and it's been quite interesting to see the different methods that are being employed. Of course, I think this is done so that it makes it very difficult for each country to identify with the other countries, because the social structure is so different. I mean, it does look much the same on the surface, but the underlying social conditions are very different in most countries around the world, but all of them seem to be leading towards the same goal. and that is ultimately control and depopulation of those who don't really want to be controlled. But suffice to say, folks, the people in each country around the world are all being repressed in their own way. And it is, of course, this type of repression which leads to a loss of confidence in the people, because they just can't ever really seem to get ahead in the world, and they believe that they should be able to, because, of course, the television tells them that if they can't, then it's their problem. And it presents this white picket fence Brady Bunch reality to everybody that the people strive to achieve, which is, of course, unachievable. So it's no wonder that people lapse into depression and people develop addictions in order to compensate the inadequacies that they feel they have. But they're really not inadequate at all. Nobody is inadequate. It is the system that is designed to teach people that they are inadequate, to teach people that they will only fail, and that if they don't want to fail, they have to do things by the parameters the system provides for them. And it's a fiction, folks. But, you know, the more I see the oppression growing, and the more I see people being discarded, the more I see people's hearts awakening to the fact that something good could happen if they choose to get involved. And that really is the key, folks, for people to get involved. That's what it's all about. That's what it's always been about. And that's the opportunity that this time is providing for mankind. It's giving us the opportunity to all get involved on the ground with something that means something to us and means something to our community. Something small, something that you didn't really think about to begin with, something non-conspiratorial, something that you can use to empower the people around you into the rediscovery of themselves. I think that's going to make all the difference, and that's what this time is, folks. It's a time that we have an opportunity to do that, because we're not going to get any remedy from the system. We're not going to get any hope any other way. We're not going to find any way out of this system until we decide to change it ourselves. But look, I think we're getting to the end of the show here, folks. I'm going to have to leave it there for now, I think. Thank you very much to anybody who has ever helped out with the Crow House and made any contributions to the website. Thank you to those people who have signed up to the Patreon account that I've opened now. That's a Patreon account that I've opened for people to be able to subscribe and put in a monthly contribution if they'd like to keep the radio show and the Crow House going. And I'd really like to try to get some good contributions in there and try to get to a point where I can actually employ people to try to get this message out a little bit more. I've been doing this on my own for so long, and it will be so good to be able to have the money needed to be able to really push this message forward now, folks. I really think the world needs to have people getting involved, and it really needs to have the right message getting out to the people. And I'm seeing a huge groundswell everywhere I go. I am seeing pockets of resistance everywhere, so please don't give up, and please don't think that you are alone in this struggle, because we're not. We're all doing this together, and we are finding a way forward. But if anyone is able to subscribe to the Patreon account, it would be most appreciated, folks. I really do need some support at this time. I've basically run out of the funding to be able to keep myself going on my own, and so it's going to be up to public support to keep the radio show on the air and to allow this message to continue to be brought to the people. And folks, anybody who has been contributing, please understand that the only way to get contributions to me or to the Crow House is to donate directly through the Crow House. To anybody who's been donating to Full Circle Project, it's very appreciated that you're donating to the project, but that money does go to the project. I don't see any of that money. If you do wish to support thecrowhouse.com or the continuation of the radio show, please do think about subscribing to the Patreon account. But that is it for me, folks. I will look forward to speaking to you again soon. I'll try to get a show out next week. I don't know whether I'll be able to, because I'm traveling to the UK in the next week, but I'll see what I can do. And if I can't, then I'll try to get one out the week after. But I'll definitely be back on the air by the end of May. And you'll get a few shows through May anyway. Thank you very much for spending this time with me today. Please take care until I'm able to come onto the air again. And I'll look forward to speaking to you then. In Lakesh, my friends. In Lakesh.